You know, I'm really humbled by it. I think what is a beautiful thing is that when something is put on your heart, it doesn't often come to fruition exactly how you think it's going to look, or it may be time and it just takes a long time. But I think I'm really honored that I saw something in a relatively short amount of time. But one thing that's been connecting dots for me is the idea of having a piece of property with essentially a commercial building on it, but one that is very beautiful.
One of the most important things I've learned in my life is that a person can achieve all their goals, they can be wealthy, and still not be fully free. As I climbed the wealth ladder and grew a company that was one of the most successful real estate investment companies of its kind here in St. Louis, Missouri, on the outside, I had everything I had dreamed of. The beautiful wife, nicer car than I thought I'd drive, nicer home, beautiful kids. And yet, on the inside, I didn't really feel any different. I still felt, quite frankly, like a slave. I was chasing money. I was chasing my next goal. And when I hit the goal, I wouldn't take the time to celebrate it. And I didn't know how to fully enjoy the journey along the way. So as I've aged, I've gotten curious, you know, how do we make our entire lives wealthy and not just one component of it? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to interview the guests on this show. And yeah, we're going to talk about what they've done and what their stories are and how they've become financially wealthy. But also, I want to dig into their relationship with money and their relationships with other and if they have more joy and fulfillment than when they started out, or if they don't, and why or why not. So thanks for tuning in. We got a great guest coming for you. Let's get started. Hey guys, Jim Anning here. Excited to bring you another next chapter segment of the Passive Wealth Show. And this all started because we have 130 partners that are either financially free themselves or they're on the path to becoming financially free. And we started asking ourselves the question, like what happens when you're in that next chapter of your life? And today I am beyond excited to bring to you Lori Bolthouse. And Lori has done all sorts of amazing things with her life. She was a producer on a movie called Trade of Innocence back in 2012, which highlights the issues of human trafficking in Cambodia. And she's also been part of a founder of a group called the Thrive Organization. And this is an organization that's dedicated to supporting North American women ministering overseas. And it was founded in 1997. So Lori, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate you and you spending some time with us. I got that background from ChatGPT. That sounds like it did kind of okay. I asked you about it before we clicked record. Let's fill in some gaps though. Tell us more about you. Let's get going on this.
Thank you. Thanks, Jim. It's good to be a part of healthy conversations that even I'm growing in as well. So you mentioned Thrive. That takes me back to 1997, where we had at the time 1-year-old twins, and we were actually getting ready to head over to the mission field to do some relief work, development work, and some church planning work with an organization. And it was a crazy time, obviously, having at the time twin babies. And I was reading this little pamphlet, and it was the sweetest poem for new moms. And something just really hit me then. As I was reading it, I thought, wow, someone really gets my life. Like, this is just really sweet. I think I was even feeding one of the babies at the time. And then all of a sudden it came to me, I thought, gosh, if this is really touching me right now, what would this be like overseas? And we're about to embark on that. Oh my goodness. Like, I wonder if there's materials out there for, you know, women, they've called them missionary women, to global workers today. And so I started researching and couldn't find anything. And I thought, well, that's really unfortunate. It's like, of course I need it now, but like, I'm in the States, I've got community, I have some resources, but over there, I felt like might be just a little bit more, I might be limited. So I reached out to a friend of mine and asked her if she knew anything about it, and she didn't. So we started brainstorming together. And before long, I actually had like a little bit of a vision in the middle of the night. And maybe I'd call it old fashioned, but it was a magazine layout. And I know we still read magazines today, but that was the only option back then. But I could see the layout of even some recipes of how to make some creative things with certain products that you would have only in your part of the world, to all these articles written by global women for global women. And I just thought, wow, that would be really amazing. And of course, we're 6 months out before looking at departing ourselves to go over and join a team in Eastern Europe. So actually, that was the beginning of Thrive. And at the time, it was called Women of the Harvest, but they changed the name quite a while back. They gave me the really lofty title of founder. And I think they probably should, I'm not trying to be like purposely humble, but like I should have just been called like the idea girl, because I had a little bit of seed money that I could help them begin it. But I'm leaving to go overseas with my husband and our two baby girls at the time, and really don't have time to think about starting a nonprofit. But with some grace and some help and other people that were capable of doing that, that began the launch of Thrive. It wasn't long before I was overseas when I started to then feel the need. You can see this is centered around me a little bit and my needs, you know, hopefully it would help other people, but I was thinking of myself, to be honest. And as we were overseas in the beginning stages, I thought, boy, it'd be really nice if there was a retreat for women, and one that didn't say that it was a retreat, maybe with your sending organization or your home church, because that's really more, there's more strategy behind that. That's not truly retreat. So a bunch of us, I think it was maybe 15 of us, put something together, meaning 15 participants, and we met in Istanbul, Turkey for the first Women of the Harvest / Thrive retreat back in a long time ago, 1997 or 98, I can't remember. Well, come now to 2000 here, 24, and I can't even tell you how many retreats that they've done. I stepped out of it and they still gave me this lofty title as a founder, and but incredible women and men have been leading in helping to minister to women that are abroad through online resources, through spiritual formation, mentoring, and then 3 or 4 times a year they strategically have different retreats around the world, and then they bring in counselors and, oh my goodness, what a hairstylist and a speaker who has been on the field or worked abroad herself, and just to really uplift the women that are on the field, because there are not a lot of resources.
What does it feel like to have, regardless if you're founder or whatever the title is, what does it feel like to have be part of like the initial ideas of a organization that's had such a good imprint over the last, I guess, is it 30 years now?
Yeah, I think so. 25.
What does that feel like?
You know, I'm really humbled by it. I think what is a beautiful thing is that when something is put on your heart, it doesn't often come to fruition exactly how you think it's going to look, or it may be time and it just takes a long time. But I think I'm really honored that I saw something in a relatively short amount of time come to fruition, even while I was abroad, but I got to be a beneficiary of it. So I'm really humbled. I think it's truly one thing to have an idea. It's another thing to have other people take that, sustain it, develop it, and take it into something else. So when I do get an occasional update from them, I'm just in awe, because it's almost hard to believe that that started from a dream or technically a poem that I was reading. And it really encourages me to believe that God sees me. He sees us when he implants things within us. So yeah, it's amazing.
So and so we were on a group call a week or two ago where you're talking about like this next phase of your life too, and how you have a vision kind of for the future and some additional ideas that you're looking to do. Can we dig into that a little bit too? So 2024 at the time of this recording, What's the next big thing? What do you got going?
Well, I didn't think there would be another big thing out there. I'm in the stage where our kids are grown. We've just had our first grandbaby, and so I'm kind of open to what that brings. But one thing that's been connecting dots for me is the idea of having a piece of property with essentially a commercial building on it, but one that is very beautiful. And I think this stems from seeing different pieces of property around my city. And just every once in a while, there's just a special one. And I would say, oh man, I wish that that place was a really beautiful breakfast restaurant. I mean, look at the path exit or access and the lake that it's on. That would just be, why does it have to be this piece? And it's not very attractive. But I'm in the rearing years, and those things aren't doable. At least they weren't for me, and I wasn't thinking about it. But there's been enough of that. Or I'll see a beautiful flower shop, and I thought, man, I wish people knew more about this, and we could elevate this owner and the beautiful things that they're creating. And it was last year I was in the Cotswolds with my daughter, and we were in a at a farm, a market that someone had told us to visit. And I walked in and I thought, oh, now this is speaking to me. And what it was is it was something very beautiful on the outside. Think a little bit more like stone, not cutesy cottage like in the English countryside, but just very very beautiful but not pretentious. And it welcomes you in with some fresh fruit and vegetables. Again, not a whole farmer's market, but just this is the start of entering in. And then there's fresh baked bread, and they have a Michelin star restaurant there, which is sort of interesting because it is the most casual restaurant that you have ever seen. And that's not really my goal, but it was one building that contained many beautiful things, from the way that they had laid the rock on the floor to just beautiful finishes. And it just invited you in. And as you were sitting down, you would look outside, the sight lines would just draw you in out of curiosity. And there's more beauty around the corner. And I'm a big flower girl. Like, I'm obsessed with them. I think it's like, the closest thing to heaven before they die. And so when I could see that being a part of a beautiful building, and so I came back and just thought, I feel like a lot of dots of very simple things along many years are coming together. And I would love to see a beautiful building. And some of it stems too from the fact that we do a lot of just life inside our home. We've created a home of hospitality, and lots of people have lived with us, and we never know who we might be hosting from one night to another, or getting a quick cup of coffee. But there's a lot that goes on in our home. And then we'll buy things, say like one of our daughter's friends is a artist and she's raising money for something. Well, we'll buy her art piece, and we'll just create things that are important to us as we elevate other people. But some people are like, oh, you're art collectors. And I thought, well, that has a certain connotation with it, and I'd like to think I'm not in that category, right? But collecting things that are beautiful. And so, what would that mean to take a little bit more of the inner workings of our house and to place that in a beautiful building outside and inside that is a commercial place, not like food stalls, but just a gathering place of beauty as well? So, that's my latest big vision. And maybe because you just asked me about Thrive, there's no coincidence that I should remember back a long time ago that sometimes those crazy ideas actually come to fruition. So you got me thinking.
Absolutely. Yeah, so then will it be a like a community kind of gathering center, or like what are you thinking?
I actually see it as like that would be the outpouring of what happens, but that it would actually be like a nice market, a nice place to come into that has the many things that you would want, and that you could also have a long cup, coffee with somebody. You could enjoy a nice meal at a restaurant, maybe have a beautiful glass of wine or a cold beer outside. There's fresh bread. There's flowers and maybe a delicatessen or some kind of really good meat, wine and cheese room. These are just kind of my dreams right now. I'm just kind of giving you a concept. But I think that even like the parking and to the entering in is meant to be beautiful too, that it's just not a building that looks even what I would say is, kind of hip, but I love really good acoustics, you know, and I'm saying something about my age, but I'm not going to, make light of that, because as you get older, there's certain things that you enjoy that are just seasoned. And if you can't hear the person across from you when you're enjoying a nice meal, it kind of defeats the purpose of going out. Mm-hmm. And so what could that look like to have a beautiful space in and out? Because I really think people are longing for beauty today, whether we're coming out of the pandemic or just the IT world that we live in. I think we'll always long for beautiful things. And I know you can't just build a business on beautiful things, but I am going to say, I think it can go a long way today.
And then, the beautiful component of it is very important to you. And what about like bringing people together in an environment like that? Like why is that so important to you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's because that's automatically what we do here in our home. I think I can give my mom credit for always having an open home. And especially during the holidays, if people didn't have a place to celebrate a meal with somebody else, that would be our home. And so there's remnants of that today that I've really taken on to be like, everybody's welcome. And my daughter and her husband have a tagline that says, beauty belongs to everyone. And so I think that there's a lot that we can experience through beauty, and not just the invitation to come in, but sort of the thought of like, I'm expecting you. And I remember a story when I was a little girl and I got to go over to my friend Molly's house for overnight. And I loved going to her house. And it wasn't until I was older that I got to understand what this was. And so we'd wake up in the morning, and it didn't just happen once, it happened more than once, is that we would go upstairs for breakfast, and guess what? There was a place setting for me. There was like a Flintstones vitamin for me. And I mean, I had a wonderful home growing up, but Flintstone vitamins were not in the budget, but it's like I was expected and there was a place for me. And that was a powerful image that seared on me. And so as we have done that in our home and different places that we've lived overseas, I would like people to know, and maybe a more public space, that there is a place for them to come and enjoy beauty and to be. So I think that, that's how I'd answer that right now.
So it's really becoming a purpose for you is what I'm hearing too, that you can impact people's lives that way. And do you this is just the second call that we've new acquaintances. I'd like to call you a friend already, just because you're mm-hmm. Having such a nice soul. I get the sense you have a lot of joy in your life right now too. Like you're at a very nice place of peace. Has it always been that way? Has there been any times in your life that you've really kind of struggled to grasp the beauty?
I would definitely say yes to that. And it's interesting as you say that, because I would say it's centered around money.
Okay.
And that may sound kind of weird, because I believe that we've had a lot of joy in giving, but I would say, if you want to say it's like maybe the darker side of myself, but I would say I've had to learn the most through, as I've been generous, I also have the side that doesn't want to be generous sometimes, or say you're asked for money again for some reason. And most of the time I think I am bent towards that, but I'm also bent a little bit towards myself, and I can get a little bit callous of being asked again and again. And I have found in seasons of my life that when I react strongly to maybe one more pitch for something or a coffee that I wasn't expecting that is actually an ask for money, is that I have learned a lot about my responses and how to really pay attention to that and really incorporate the Lord's heart in that and think wisely about why I'm reacting a certain way. But I would say if I have felt the lack of joy, it's almost always been when there is an issue of money and tension and maybe what I'm holding on to. And we could unpack that in a really deep psychological way too, but I think it's interesting that, you know, we're talking about all of these things and joy, and I do have a lot of joy. I have a lot of peace. But I think that's come through a lot of abiding and a lot of ups and downs, and then trusting that the Lord is the one that produces the fruit for that and the joy. And it hasn't always been easy.
Yeah, I could see how that can be a burden. Thinking you're going to have a coffee with a friend and then all of a sudden it's hitting you up for this XYZ. And it could even be a good cause, but then if that's the conversation you have over and over and over again, what advice would you give to yourself, before you kind of like went into that phase of your life that would have helped you?
I think it's important to really know yourself and how you connect with people and what your expectations are from others. I think what I've had to learn over time is that people with, for example, in the nonprofit world who are development officers, it's their job to raise money, and it is not an easy one. And so what is my expectation going into, say, a coffee? I think development people have a really hard job because they're also encouraged to be very relational and to care about the person. But you have to have wisdom when it comes to, well, is this person now becoming my friend? Or is this person have the asking for money hat on? And so I don't think it's the other person's fault, but I think we have to be really clear about what our own expectations are. And another daughter said, my daughters give a lot of wisdom, but another daughter said that when there are finances or there is a burden or a lack of joy, essentially it's only a burden if you carry it by yourself. And so I think that's a piece of advice that I would have for anybody, including myself, is to remember not to be solo in your thinking, solo and thinking that you're alone, but in the context of community. And of course, you know, developing a very honest and open relationship with Jesus and how you're feeling, but being with other people that have also experienced this or could encourage you. Because I think if we live solo or siloed lives and we're talking about finances, there's just a lot of, I don't know, bad narratives that are easier to come about and for me to latch onto than it is in the context of community where people are sharpening each other.
That is fascinating. So then you have this new center that you're kind of eyeing up, maybe going to do it, maybe not. What else is going on in your world right now? New grandbaby.
Yeah, there seems like there's always something going on. I think, let's see. One thing that's going on is, that we have chosen this year to, can I say the name of a organization if it's a positive thing?
Sure. Yeah.
But we love, I don't know if you've heard, but we love the Bible Project out of Portland, Oregon. They do amazing, amazing work, and they're able to communicate the Bible through animation and through commentary, visual commentaries, in just an extraordinary gifted way. But the reason I say what's going on right now is that this is one of their first times where collectively in the community around the world that they are putting out all of their work around the Sermon of the Mount. And I think if all of us studied the Sermon of the Mount and meditated on, which we've been doing since January together as a couple, my husband and I, and then we get online every Friday morning early with four or five other people, some that live in another state. And we have been doing the devotionals and listening to the podcasts and meditating and marinating on the word. So what's new is that the Jesus way continues to be really challenging. And so what is new is thinking about and really meditating on what Jesus is asking of our hearts. Not the old way, you knew this from the law, but I'm going to say this. And he puts a spin on maybe the legalistic aspects of our walk that we do. And he keeps requiring more within a very upside down world of his. And I believe that that applies to us today, whether it's finances and whether it's how anger that we have towards our brothers and sisters and keeping oaths. And I mean, it's just very, very challenging. So I'm still pondering a lot of that, but to be immersed in the Sermon of the Mount this whole year and that everything we're listening to is circled around that, I know that's doing some deep work. And so that feels relevant today. And I think what it also helps me with staying connected to the word is that with visions or dreams or things that I'd love to see happen, it also doesn't have to happen for me. Mm-hmm. I would love to see this beautiful market take place. I would love to see beautiful community building and accessibility for people to just get to something as a destination that's beautiful and it's wholesome and just something a little bit different here within the community. At the same time, it's not so tied to my identity that I have to have it built to leave a legacy in my lifetime. I don't think that that's necessarily, I would rather have the space and the time to think about relationships and a grandbaby and friends and the church and neighbors than I would spending so much time that this thing had to be built. And I think that if I was 20 or 30 years younger, it might have looked a little bit different for me where I needed to have that built for the sake of seeing my vision or my dreams.
Yeah. Come.
And today I hold it really loosely.
Yeah. It's not as tied to meaning of yourself or what your worth is. I mean, really what you're saying is really powerful. And what I can appreciate it, guys, is regardless of what your beliefs are or not, Lori is sharing her truth and how she's found joy and what's worked for her at a very high level. And I think that's amazing that you're open and willing to share. And I can, I can just, the only thing I can really do is share my truth as well. And I mean, in my 20s, I was doing a tremendous amount of real estate investing deals. And I grew up in a Jesuit high school, and the saying was for the greater glory of God. And I kind of said to myself, well, if I'm taking a neglected property, fixing it up, I'm making a home for a family, so it must be for the greater glory of God. But when I got honest with myself, as I got in my 30s, I realized it was really for the greater glory of Jim, that a lot of my self-worth was tied into how big of a company, how many deals we were doing and everything like that. And I became so focused on the achievement and the gap of where we were going compared to where we were, that I did not have as much joy in my life that I should have. And it wasn't until I really got much more grounded and connected with my faith that I've also kind of been able to get there as well. So Lori, I've had a lot of the very similar feelings on my journey as well. Thank you for sharing that with us. Is there, as you look into this kind of next phase, I mean, really what I'm feeling from you is a focus on your faith, a focus on the relationships, and bringing people together in a beautiful way. And so that we can create an environment of joy. What do you think? Like, fast forward 10 years, like what's life look like? What, More of the same? Anything else? What do you think?
Thanks for the question. I don't get asked that, nor do I ask other people or think about that very much. Excuse me. I guess for right now, I would say more of the same. I appreciate you letting me just be open about, you know, where I'm at. And I'm trying to be respectful too of, you know, all audiences who never know, you know, where people are at. But I do believe we all have a proclivity towards some kind of faith. And I think we just have to ask, you know, what is that filter? What is that faith that we operate out of? Even if it's not, you know, a faith or it's atheistic. I mean, that's still, I mean, it's technically still a faith. It's what do we value? You know, what are the things that we value? And so I just know there's a lot of really beautiful things going on there, going on out in the world that people are putting their hands and their hearts and their minds to work and creating a lot of beauty. I sometimes wish, probably like all of us do, but I don't think, I just wish that we could hear about more pockets of beauty and where healing is taking place, because it is going on. And in 10 years, I mean, I would love to see, I probably couldn't hire my grandkids to work at this market that I would have one day, but not too long after that, I'll take advantage of their skills. But I would love to see it as a place that people felt like someone was expecting them. Someone was hoping that they would come and just be there and experience community in a beautiful place, or kind of like a beautiful home, but
that's right.
It's out in public.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's, what's so interesting about this is you just remind me of something that I learned about humans. And if you think about the way we've been designed, if we were out in the jungle and there's all sorts of leaves and branches and everything like that around, and then all of a sudden, like a jaguar pops up, like our brain has had to, for thousands and thousands of years, be able to see that sign of danger, see that negative, that potential threat. And I was talking to someone that worked for a news station, and I said, hey, why aren't there more like happy stories out there? Like, there's all these headlines that create anxiety and fear and on people. And he said, well, what, every time we try and run a feel good story, people don't pay attention to it. People are paying attention to the stuff that could threaten them or, you know, hook them in. And the fascinating part about it is, just because that's like how we're naturally designed, doesn't mean that we can't make a stand for something or decide, hey, I'm going to live my life more intentionally on purpose and create beauty into the world and live in a way of with joy. And it's not as easy of a thing as you might think. You might think, oh, well, can't I just be happy and have joy? And well, there's also this whole survival thing that our body's designed to do, right? So anyway, I really just appreciate this conversation. I appreciate getting to know you. Is there any kind of closing thoughts as we wrap up this call that you'd like to share?
Something that just came to my mind is, I think what kind of tipped me over and to see if this dream could come about was, there's a little breakfast restaurant just up the street from me that opened 2 or 3 months ago. And it's in what I would call a kind of basic strip mall behind a Grease Monkey. And there's nothing really beautiful about it. The strip mall itself, the parking is horrendous. But someone said, oh, you should go there and try their crepes. They're really good. And I thought, oh, I'd love to support local business. So I went there and I walked in and I said, oh, no, this is something different. And I could tell that the owners had put their heart and soul into the decorations, even the color schemes, fresh flowers on the table. Even outside, they went to the expense of a little piece of turf grass. It's the most beautiful color turf that's out in a very gray parking lot. It's the only color out there. But that's what, okay, so that was my experience. And even the way that they, the types of cups they served the coffee in, and you could just tell there was just a lot of their hearts and forethinking going on. But what I started to do, and I've been there proudly five or six times since, is that I listened to people coming in for the first time. And this is what I can, this is what I hear when people come in. They walk into the strip mall, because you can't, or the commercial site there, they walk in and they're like, oh, this is beautiful. Like they are just transcended to something different at that moment. And they look around, and then another person will come in and go, oh, it's about time. Now this is a place I want to come to. And this keeps sticking to me as well. And I don't think it's just beauty for the sake of beauty, sort of like I think people are quick to just say, hey, the universe, Mother Earth is an amazing place. I think it's even beyond that. I think it's like it's the actual creator himself who's been breathing into us as artists, breathing into his world to care for it. And it's not just, it's not the thing itself you know, kind of idolize. It's actually the one who created it. And it reminds me a little bit of when, you know, you have like your child might come up to you and they've painted a picture and it's scribbles, it's whatever, but it is, it's so beautiful to you and you just love it. But it would be like, we just carry around all the time, the picture, or like the small store or my market say, Hey, look at this, look at this. But it's like, what I really want you to know is like, I want you to know that my little daughter made this. She's the one, you know, don't look at the picture. I mean, it's good, right? It's great, but this is my girl, you know? And so in some ways I liken that to a higher power of God that says, if I'm going to have a place of people to come to be in my home and to share a meal, I don't want it just to be about my home. I want it to be about something that's even greater than that. And maybe that's the God of the universe, the God of humans, that's saying, I'm going to instill my dreams and my thoughts into you to co-create together. And I believe that there's something mysterious and eternal in it that I can't understand as a human. So I think that's how I would end.
Wow. What a beautiful insight. Yeah, that's, I'm just letting it sink in. I really enjoyed hearing you, and my timing of this conversation is fantastic. I'm getting ready to go to a little beach trip in Hilton Head. Here we're driving out tomorrow with the family, and you're going to give me a lot to think about on that beach, kind of watching the waves crash in. And but yeah, there's definitely something in everything we do in life, whether it's starting a business or operating one or raising your children, when you make it about something bigger, that's just the specialness is. So Lori, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And, thank you guys for tuning in, and we will see you next time.
All right, guys, that's a wrap. Thanks so much for tuning in. We have a website, passivewealthshow.com, where you can get more great content and resources. We offer a passive profit strategy session, and you can find that on our website as well, where we'll basically ask you a bunch of discovery questions and help you figure out if investing passively is a good thing for you or not. So go to our website, passivewealthshow.com, and we'll go from there.